Welcome to the Collaborative Psychiatry Podcast, where we help busy primary care providers build confidence in managing mental health. I'm Dr. Daniel Suter, a psychiatrist trained in general and addiction psychiatry and currently working in collaborative and integrated care. I created this platform to make psychiatric education simple, practical, and genuinely useful for real-world medicine. Thanks to the support of our subscribers, this podcast remains completely free of commercial influence. Everything you hear reflects my own clinical experience and interpretation of the literature. No sponsorships or outside agendas. If you want to learn more about our mission, visit us at collaborative-psychiatry.org. We've got in-depth CME courses, clinical tools, and lots of other subscriber resources. These quick take episodes are designed to give you high-yield, evidence-based tools that you can start using right away in clinic. If you're interested in more in-depth learning, check out our full-length CME audio course on managing depression in primary care through our website. It's about an hour and a half long and covers everything from diagnosis to med selection, augmentation approaches, ketamine, and more. We'll also be releasing a full-length audio course on stimulants for ADHD after the end of this season. If you find this quick take helpful, please don't forget to subscribe or leave a review. And check out our website for downloadable clinical tools and resources that will help you put the information you learn here into practice with your patients. Let's get into it. Okay, so today we're going to talk about something that is unfortunately relatively uncommon, and that is new psychiatric medications. To be fair, when I say new, the two medications we're discussing today are not actually that new. They've been around for over a decade now, but for whatever reason have not gotten a lot of shine outside the world of psychiatry. The two medications I'm referring to are vilazodone, which is branded with the snazzy name Vibrid, with two I's, and vortioxetine, which is Trintellix. The learning objectives for this episode are as follows. By the end of this quick take, you should be able to identify the key differences between vilazodone and vortioxetine and traditional SSRIs. You should be able to compare the side effect profiles of these newer antidepressants with traditional SSRIs, particularly regarding sexual dysfunction and weight gain. You'll feel comfortable with dosing and titration schedules for these medications in clinical practice. And finally, you'll develop an understanding of when to use these medications and how to fit them into antidepressant medication selection algorithms. Now, if you get into the weeds with these two drugs in terms of mechanisms of action, pharmacodynamics, etc., there are many subtle differences between the two, but generally speaking, I put them in the same bucket in my head. And I put that bucket right next to SSRIs, because they both work primarily through the serotonin system. Our classic SSRIs, such as fluoxetine, sertraline, etc., are all, as the name would imply, serotonin-specific reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs. They work by blocking the serotonin reuptake receptor on our neurons. But that's not the only serotonin receptor that exists out there. There are lots of different ways that serotonin works and receptors through which it does that work. So when they were designing these two new medications, the thought was, well, what if we approach the serotonin system, which we know is involved in anxiety and depression, through slightly different mechanisms? Maybe we could do an even better job at improving these symptoms. Unfortunately, I don't know that we can say yet that the outcomes are all that different from our traditional SSRIs, but they do certainly work and are great tools to have in your pockets, due in my mind primarily to better side effect profiles. There's no reason to remember these specifics, but for the sake of completeness, I'll touch briefly on the mechanisms of action for each of these meds, which explain how they're different from SSRIs. Vilazodone works through that classic reuptake receptor inhibition that we see with all other serotonergic medications. However, in addition to that, it's also a partial agonist of the serotonin 5-HT1A receptor. Vortioxetine also has serotonin reuptake inhibition activity, but it's also an agonist at the serotonin 5-HT1A receptor and affects a handful of other serotonin receptors in various ways that are not really that important to remember. Essentially, they are SSRI plus medications, doing what we typically expect from an SSRI, as well as likely a host of other poorly understood effects from their action on other serotonin receptors. At base, what that means is that you can use them the same way you would SSRIs. They're both FDA approved for MDD, But much like we use SSRIs pretty much indiscriminately for depression or anxiety symptoms, even outside of their specific FDA-approved indications, we can do the same with these two. So even though they haven't been studied as extensively in, say, persistent depressive disorder, GAD, OCD, or PTSD, we can still use them to address the depression and anxiety symptoms that result from these diagnoses. What really sets these two apart, in my mind, is their side effect profile. We still have the potential for GI and headache side effects on initiation, just like the rest of the SSRIs. But what we don't tend to see with these two is weight gain or sexual side effects. As we talked about in our SSRI side effect quick take, those two side effects are the major limiters of SSRI adherence, and rightfully so, can be very distressing to patients. To have two other options here that we can turn to address that large burden of anxiety and depression symptoms that we see come up in primary care and not have to worry about those side effects is huge. I think it's interesting to think mechanistically for a moment here, specifically with regards to sexual side effects. If you think back to the first episode of the season on SSRI-related side effects, one of the medications we said you can add on to an SSRI to treat sexual side effects is buspirone. Well, mechanistically, buspirone works through partial agonism of the 5-HT1A receptor. Now, if you recall, again, the mechanism of action of vilazodone is essentially SSRI reuptake inhibition plus 5-HT1A partial agonism. So it's kind of like an SSRI plus buspirone rolled up in one medication. Vortioxetine is a little bit different, but I generally think of it the same way. So it makes some degree of sense that there's a significant reduction in the amount of sexual side effects we see due to that 5-HT1A activity. So as an initial summary, I basically think of these two meds as SSRIs without weight gain or sexual side effects. That's not to say it's not possible to develop either of those side effects with vilazodone or vortioxetine, because again, individual responses to all psychiatric medications can vary significantly. It's just that the risk is significantly reduced when compared with your typical SSRIs. So that all sounds great. Why not just prescribe these meds for all your patients with anxiety or depressive symptoms? For me personally, I still turn to these medications as second line to our standard SSRIs or SNRIs. And that's because of the same fact that we just mentioned. Individual responses to psych meds vary significantly, and we don't know which medication will work for which individual. It's not uncommon that the first medication you start, whether that be sertraline, vilazodone, or duloxetine, won't work, and you'll have to switch medications. This could be due to lack of efficacy, or it could be due to side effects. There's no real way of predicting. But I'd almost say that switching at some point is the rule rather than the exception. More on that coming up in our quick take episode on switching antidepressants. But say I start sertraline, and it's effective. That's great, right? We're good. But if I start sertraline and it doesn't work for whatever reason and I have to switch, if I'm switching to vilazodone, I'm going to feel pretty good about it because I'm moving to an agent with fewer side effects, which makes it a little bit more likely to stick. On the flip side, if I start vilazodone and it doesn't work, and then I have to switch to sertraline, I'm moving to a medication with the potential for more side effects, which can be a bit more difficult. Now I'm running the chance that my second medication isn't tolerated, and both the patient and I start to get frustrated with constant switching of medications. Generally speaking, if you have to switch meds, it's easier to switch to one with fewer side effects. And that's why I tend to reserve these two as second-line agents for your average patient. Or I'll use it for those individuals who come in saying, "You know, doc, I've been on all the antidepressants. None of them work, or I can't tolerate them because of side effects." Oftentimes, patients haven't heard of vilazodone or vortioxetine, so you can bill them as a bit newer and different, which they are, and maybe get more patient engagement with them, even if they haven't had great experiences with antidepressants in the past. Now, to get down to the nitty-gritty in terms of picking between these two medications, there are a few considerations to take into account. The primary consideration, in all honesty, is patent status. Vilazodone came off patent in 2022, so it's pretty widely available and rarely at this point requires a prior authorization. Vortioxetine, on the other hand, is still on patent, likely through 2026 or 2027, so it may be a bit more of a hassle in terms of getting insurance coverage. You'll likely have to document failed trials to other antidepressants, etc. For this reason alone, at this point, I think it's probably easiest to get familiar with vilazodone and bring that one into your prescribing toolbox, and save vortioxetine for those patients where nothing else seems to be working, and it feels like it's worth the extra effort to get it approved. The other difference of note between the two is that vilazodone should ideally be taken with food, whereas vortioxetine is food independent. Vilazodone is lipophilic, so food, especially high fat meals, enhances its absorption, and it also undergoes extensive first-pass metabolism, so the delayed gastric emptying that comes with a meal helps with this as well. Now finally, in terms of actual prescribing and dosing, these two are relatively straightforward. We're going to start vilazodone at 10 milligrams and then increase to 20 milligrams if the patient is tolerating it after a week or so. As with most antidepressants, you'll want to give that initial dose 4 to 6 weeks then to assess for effect. If there's only been minimal response, at that point you can increase to 30 milligrams and then to a max of 40 milligrams daily over the next few months. For vortioxetine, it's the same thing, just cut in half basically. I generally start at 5 milligrams daily and then increase to 10 milligrams after a week or so. And from there, if necessary, you can increase to a max dose of 20 milligrams daily after 4 to 6 weeks. Typically, I start both these medications as daytime medications, and in the relatively rare chance that someone reports feeling more tired or sedated during the day, as we discussed in the side effect episode, I'll switch to nighttime dosing. Neither one is associated with QTC prolongation, so we don't have to worry about that, which is great. Okay, so I think that's all I have to say about these two, but before we wrap up, let's quickly review the key points about these medications. In terms of how they work, both are SSRI plus medications that combine traditional serotonin reuptake inhibition with additional actions on other serotonin receptors, particularly 5-HT1A, and this likely contributes to their improved side effect profiles. Regarding the side effects, their main advantage is significantly reduced risk of sexual dysfunction and weight gain compared to traditional SSRIs, while still maintaining similar efficacy for depression and anxiety symptoms. When it comes to dosing, for vilazodone, start with 10 mg with food, increase to 20 after 1 week, with a potential to increase to 30 or 40 as needed. For vortioxetine, begin at 5, increase to 10 after 1 week, with a maximum of 20 milligrams if necessary. And finally, in terms of treatment strategy, you can think of these as excellent second-line options after a traditional SS or SNRI, or as first-line options for patients particularly concerned about side effects, or who've had bad experiences with antidepressants in the past. Vilazodone may be more accessible again due to its off-patent status, while vortioxetine might require prior authorization. And that's it for today's episode. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget to check out the downloadable companion resources for this episode available on our website at collaborative-psychiatry.org/quicktakes. For a small subscription fee that will help keep us up and running, you'll get access to detailed show notes, as well as a comparison table detailing differences between vilazodone and vortioxetine and SSRIs, prescribing flowchart for these meds, and patient handouts for each of the medications. If this episode made your work a little bit easier, please consider sharing it with a colleague or leaving a quick review on whatever podcast app you use most frequently. It really helps us reach more providers and spread this information more widely. And our disclaimer, the content in this podcast is intended for general educational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine or the establishment of a professional relationship. The use of the information in this podcast in clinical practice is at your own discretion and risk. Thanks again for joining us today, and see you back here in 2 weeks for the final episode of Season 1 of our Quick Take series. We'll be covering an often underused tool in primary care psychiatry, which is naltrexone. If you're treating patients with alcohol use, and many of us are, even if we don't always realize it, you'll want to know how and when to consider it. Coming up after Season 1, we'll be dropping our second audio course on stimulants for ADHD in primary care. If you liked our quick takes on ADHD this season, this course is going to fill all the gaps and leave you with a real sense of confidence when it comes to these medications.